The Sports Cage Podcast is brought to you by the Canadian Brewhouse. Order your favorite CBH menu items from the comfort of your home with Skip the Dishes. Here's your host, Derek Taylor.
It is Thursday. It's the Sports Cage on 620 CKRM. Thank you so much for being with us, whether live, whether Sports Cage on demand. You're getting us in podcast. Perhaps you're out for a run. If you are, you are a special breed, because when it gets this cold, Zinger, I'm in the house.
Or maybe you're at home eating chicken, like Zinger does. Had leftovers again last night.
Leftovers, you son of a...
I know Clayton's jealous of me. I already know that for a fact.
Yeah, I had oatmeal with blueberries this morning.
Oh, that does not sound appealing.
Clayton, I offer you oatmeal with blueberries or leftover chicken.
I'm going oatmeal with blueberries.
Back in the
old junior football days, we used to get buckets of KFC and live off of it for like 4 days. That stuff just turns to complete garbage after 2 days. And then, like fettuccine Alfredo and Michael Scott's stomach, it just turns into a rock. Like, it just wrecks you.
Zinger, this blasphemy, I don't know if it has any basis in fact, but two, I don't know that I can stand for that kind of... It turns bad after 2 days? No.
Leftover fried chicken, like from KFC? Oh, yeah, absolutely. Man. Man, the skin turns like wet almost. It's gross.
Wow. That's your... As Dr. Nick said, that's your window to weight gain. Come on.
Well, that's grease. No, that's grease. Grease is fine. It's literally like a liquid. It's like... grease is kind of thick, you know? It's actually like a watery substance. It's gross.
This is disrespectful to Colonel Sanders. We got to change the subject.
Yeah. He died for our sins, Clayton. And you're slandering his original recipe chicken.
I picked your breakfast. I'm on your side. Why am I getting attacked here?
Oh, no. I wish I had Zinger's breakfast. Let's not kid ourselves. No, I just... too many chicken breakfasts mean you have to have oatmeal sometimes. So that's kind of where I'm at right now. We will discuss many things in the show. We'll hear from Jordan Williams-Lambert, the Riders receiver who re-signed yesterday, but why he wanted to come back to Saskatchewan. And he will give us the inside scoop on his training sessions with Cody Fajardo. Stayed at Fajardo's house, ate Fajardo's food, and caught Fajardo's passes. It was a good time, according to Jay Will. We will discuss that coming up a little later. Arash Madani at 5:05. He will get us on the George Springer signing, a huge one for the Toronto Blue Jays. The biggest one they've ever given the Toronto Blue Jays. And we'll discuss some... Arash wants to talk about some gambling-related topics in UFC, and we know we always enjoy that discussion. Marshall Ferguson, the voice of the Ticats at 4:30, on which team is doing the best with re-signing and renegotiating its deals. We will have a fight over whether it's the Ticats or the Riders, or if it's perhaps a third team, but I always enjoy talking football with Marshall Ferguson. And Craig Adam, who used to host Sportsline, will join us at 6:05, talk about his very good friend Warren Woods. And that's where we'll begin this show. As you, if you're a sports fan, you probably know by now, if you hadn't heard, Warren Woods, the longtime anchor at Sportsline and radio here in town, passed away yesterday afternoon in hospital at the age of 66. Warren had contracted COVID-19 and was actually in hospital for quite some time. According to his family, it was November 30th. So he was in hospital for quite some time. He's a guy that I had met on a few occasions, having only been here a couple of years. For Zinger, for folks who grew up here and folks who remember watching Sportsline, shows like that for sports fans, they take on kind of a legendary status.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they do.
Because they're your connection, right, to sports. When they came on, you weren't really necessarily a sports desk or sports center guy. You'd watch the one in your town, and thus people who were on that show, people like Warren Woods, really took on a much greater meaning for sports fans.
And it was also like the era before the internet kind of took off, where you can go on the internet and just get anything that you want. You always looked forward to that like 11 p.m. slot after a Rider game to see the Rider highlights with Woodsy, right? Like that was your only hub to see the game again, but that because you can go online and see it. So those are like the really heavy memories that I carry with me for Woodsy. It's just
Woodsy and our friend Bob Krawchuk and Craig Adam, who will join us at 6:05 to talk about it, they just kind of get burned into your brain. And then to see the stories, Clayton, just about Woodsy, of he had tickets to the Pats game, but he wouldn't sit in his seat. He kind of stood at the north end and talked to people because so many people wanted to come talk to him. I feel like that's just an outstanding story and just encapsulates the guy that I knew.
As a former WHL in-stand announcer, I can say that those guys are the best guys at the rink. The guys who don't sit in their seat, they're just on the concourse, having a beer or two, talking with everyone. And that's the thing. Woodsy knew everyone. So yeah. He had to be in that spot. He didn't want people coming up to him in Section D or Section E, wherever it is, and talking to him. He wanted to talk to everyone because that's just the kind of guy he was. And he was just Regina sports guy. I mean, growing up in Saskatoon, I didn't get to catch too many of Woodsy's stuff, but even though I'm 2.5 hours away, you still know who Woodsy is in Saskatoon. I mean, that guy's just legendary status, and he's going to be missed.
Yeah, absolutely. The world of curling, just the outpouring. The Regina Pats put out a release from Warren's family yesterday at 6 o'clock, and then just the number of giant sports organizations and people that would tell stories of him and the people that are still feeling it today. It's incredible. It's great to know that the impact that he has had on the sports scene and people who enjoy sports in our fair province. And it's entirely too soon at the age of 66, but to know the impact he's left behind and the great memories that he will have given to people. Because for me growing up watching the comparable show in my home province, go, man, if I met those guys, I would just lose it. And to realize that, oh, this guy that I see on my TV every day, Warren, is just a regular dude? Ah, that's incredibly meaningful for us as viewers and as fans.
It seemed like a lot of sports reporters from across the country were going on Twitter and saying, man, like, I loved Woodsy. Like, people in BC, people in Ontario, people in Nova Scotia. I mean, you know this from being a TSN guy, a play-by-play guy. When you're traveling all over Canada and you're stopping in these places, the local sports reporter, the guy who has been there for 20 years, I mean, those are the guys you talk to when you go to a Calgary or a Vancouver or a Winnipeg, right? I mean, they're always there to welcome other sports reporters from other cities, and that's what Woodsy was, you know? Woodsy was kind of like the sports guy in Regina. He knew everyone. So when the bigwig sports reporters from Toronto and everywhere would come in, I mean, they'd love talking to Woodsy because he's the local guy with all the ins and all the outs and stuff. So, yeah, it's just really, really sad. I mean, I'm seeing videos of him partying at karaoke on Twitter,
right,
and people just like posting videos of him doing the air guitar. His air guitar was so good, and like, yeah, it's just it's a sad day for Saskatchewan sports, that's for sure.
Yeah, it certainly is. Any memories you have of Warren Woods? We would love to have them on the text line at 306-936-6262. He will definitely be missed. It's a time where, I mean, you know from listening to radio, radio's fairly partisan, but on a day like this, we are all about Warren Woods. As I mentioned, Craig Adam will join us at 6:05, talk about his former work partner and his very good friend who we lost yesterday. It is 4:14. We'll go to break. We have some NFL to talk about because apparently in the city of Detroit, it remains 1965. We'll explain that coming up on The Cage.
It's 4:15 with the afternoon rush. The BC Lions have re-signed Canadian receiver Shaq Johnson. So big Shaq back in BC. And the Steelers and quarterback Dwayne Haskins have agreed to a one-year contract. That from ESPN's Adam Schefter. Haskins was a free agent after the Washingtons released him late in the season. Capitals star Alex Ovechkin is one of four players on her COVID list. He's likely to miss four games. The league fined the Caps $100,000 for violating COVID protocols. Afternoon Rush is for oddshark.net for sports odds. Find your edge at oddshark.net.
4, 5, 6. There were 7 NFL teams that needed new head coaches. 6 of them have now filled their jobs. The Detroit Lions introducing their head coach, Dan Campbell, on this day. And Clayton, I want you to tell me in what year Dan Campbell is living when you hear this clip. Are you ready?
Oh, absolutely.
All right. Dan Campbell on what he hopes to bring to the Detroit Lions.
We're going to kick you in the teeth. All right. And when you punch us back, we're going to smile at you. And when you knock us down, we're going to get up. And on the way up, we're going to bite a kneecap off. all right? And we're going to stand up, and then it's going to take two more shots to knock us down, all right? And on the way up, we're going to take your other kneecap, and we're going to get up, and then it's going to take three shots to get us down. And when we do, we're going to take another hunk out of you. Before long, we're going to be the last one standing, all right? That's going to be the mentality.
Dan Campbell. Clayton, what year was that talk given?
I am ready to go, first of all. Like, let's go play some flag football in the park or something. I am ready. But that is like that's a speech from like the 60s and the 70s right there. I love it. I love it. Old school football, baby.
Take a salt tablet and knock him in the head. Come on. I couldn't believe that. And then ESPN just had a still frame. Apparently, the sign outside of Dan Campbell's office says, head coach / the dude.
Oh, yes. Like the Big Lebowski?
You punch us in the head, we're going to bite your kneecap, then we're going to bite your other kneecap, and we're going to, I'm like, come on. You know what let's just say this, in 2021, that's not what I want from my NFL head coach.
I like it. I like the old school mentality. Football is a physical, violent game. You need to get jacked up like that in order to play it. I just don't like the analogy, to be honest with you. Like, instead of focusing on the kneecaps, why don't you focus on not getting knocked down? Like, that should be priority number one. It seems very inefficient. Instead of getting knocked down, don't get knocked down, okay? Like, focus on that first. I don't know. I loved him when he was the interim coach for the Dolphins, though. Remember when Joe Philbin got fired and he came in? And the Dolphins were a good team after he took over. He also gives me some serious PC Principal vibes from South Park. I know both you guys are South Park fans, and like he looks exactly like PC Principal.
Oh, if he put on like the Oakley Razors, oh yeah, absolutely, he would be that. You speak about efficiency, like bite your kneecaps, just go for the groin. If you're gonna do this speech, we're going for the groin. Just say it. But
Achilles heel. No one goes for the Achilles, man. Everyone always goes for the groin. Go for the Achilles.
There you go. I mean, but the thing I really want from my head coach in 2021 is football is an offensive game now. Football's about throwing the ball all over the yard, Patrick Mahomes in this thing, and scoring points and winning games. And all I heard was 1965 and take a salt tablet and water is for wimps. That's literally all I heard from Campbell on that one.
He comes off as a meathead.
You know what?
Kind of does, yeah. Go ahead, Clayton.
It worked for T.C. Williams High School, and remember the Titans, this kind of style, okay? And they went on to be the number two team in the entire United States of America. So if it can work for the Titans, it can work for the Lions.
In 1965, where there was a – when was – Zinger, can you pull up when Remember the Titans was set? Because I feel like it was in the 60s. With Campbell, he was the – he was the assistant head coach and tight ends coach in New Orleans for 5 years. As Clayton mentioned, he was the interim head coach in Miami for a little spell. Six coaches have now been hired. These are who they are. The Jaguars have hired Urban Meyer, a guy with zero professional experience, but just a huge resume from the NCAA. The Lions, Dan Campbell, we mentioned. The Chargers hired Brandon Staley, who has been a defensive coordinator for one season in the NFL, that with the Rams. Okay. The Jets hired Robert Saleh. He was the defensive coordinator for four seasons in San Francisco, been a position coach for 11 years more. Arthur Smith, 2 years in OC, and Nick Sirianni hired today for the Eagles. He's been the offensive coordinator, but not the play caller in Indianapolis for the last three seasons. Man, they are just looking at this and just hearing some of the conversation around this, the NFL continues to reach for white guys, Clayton. This is unbelievable. A guy who was a coordinator for one season with the Rams had two of the best defensive players in the league. You know what? Let's make that guy a head coach. Sure. What are we doing here?
The fact that Eric Bieniemy from the Kansas City Chiefs doesn't have a head coaching job right now is ludicrous. That guy has been the offensive coordinator on the best offense in the NFL for 2 years. Not only that, but every single higher up in the NFL has nothing but good things to say about this guy. Every single player that plays for Eric Bieniemy loves him. No one says a bad word about the guy. And yet he doesn't even, like the Houston Texans not even offering to interview him?
Yeah.
What joke? Like, that Houston Texans job is so unattractive. Like, are they even going to have a head coach? Maybe they just have four assistant coaches because no one wants that job. Like, the fact that he doesn't have a head coach and some of these other guys got jobs, it's a head-scratcher, DT.
Yeah, the last two jobs remaining were the Eagles and, as you mentioned, the Texans. Neither one of those jobs is particularly appealing, right? And Bieniemy is the one that we're going to come back to, and he's the one I was kind of trying to point to in the beginning. That he's been, I mean, this Kansas City offense is incredibly successful. He's a part of it. People will say, well, he's not the play caller. Andy Reid is the play caller. Okay, absolutely. That's totally fair. The guy who got the Eagles job, not the play caller for his job. So what are we doing here? Brandon Staley, 1 year as a coordinator? We're going on 1 year is good enough? You're not even on the offensive side of the Rams ball where the super genius head coach is. You're on the other side of the ball. It's remarkable what's happening here. My only hope is that, especially with these last two jobs, the Eagles and the Texans, is that Bieniemy looked at them and went, there's no way I'm taking those jobs. That Texans job is an absolute nightmare with no draft picks, no talent outside of quarterback and a couple of defensive players. I don't want it. That's my hope, is that was a Bieniemy choice.
Yeah, the only thing that would make Bieniemy want to take that Houston Texans job is if Deshaun Watson is there. And by everything we're reading online, it doesn't look like Deshaun Watson is going to be there. Like, yeah. I'd rather be the OC of the Kansas City Chiefs with a video game-like quarterback out there. Like, he's playing like Mike Vick in Madden 2004. Like, you have him and this stable of receivers. He's great running backs, great O-line. I'd rather be an OC for a great offense than a head coach for a team like the Texans, for sure, if I was Eric Bieniemy.
Yeah, the cupboard is so bare outside of quarterback, and they might trade the quarterback to restock the cupboard, and then you've got absolutely nothing. But a job like the Chargers one is probably the one that will stick out the most. Okay, the Eagles won, but that job stinks. The Chargers job actually looks like a job you could get excited about, right? Justin Herbert had a really nice rookie season. Really nice. He's got offensive weapons. Yeah, you've got players on the opposite side of the ball. So Brandon Staley gets that job. You go, well, I guess the thing we don't know from the outside is, okay, who talked to Bieniemy? How much is he punished by the fact his team is still in the playoffs, which seems counterintuitive, but is entirely possible? And did Bieniemy not want that job? You can't tell me that a one-year defensive coordinator is just so much better than other more qualified candidates who, I mean, we're just throwing white guys around again. But now we're throwing new white guys around who are underqualified. And if you're going to say, hey, well, Bieniemy isn't qualified because A, B, and C, we need to acknowledge that a couple of these guys are not qualified because of A, B, and C as well.
Exactly. Like, it's just mind-boggling. Like, if there were any red flags around Eric Bieniemy, I get it. But there are none. Like, he is a bona fide NFL head coach, and he should have a job by now. Like, when you have the resume that he has, it's clear. And it just, again, like I said, it's a head-scratcher, man. That's all you could say. It's a head-scratcher.
It absolutely is. CP is on the text line. He says that clip from Dan Campbell sounds like something from the movie The Longest Yard. Where the heck is Burt Reynolds? Like, yeah, okay, 1974, I think that movie was, something like that. That would absolutely fit in there. We're going to bite him in the knee, then we're going to bite him in the other knee, and they're going to hit us in the head twice, and they're going to knock us down, they're going to stomp us into the dirt, but we're going to get up. And it's like, okay, but now you're 1-15, so what are we doing here? And then Detroit. Detroit is a hilarious team, right? Because they had, what, Jim Caldwell, who had a plus 500 record. I don't know if it was every season, but certainly for his tenure at the Lions, I believe 9-7 in his final year. They fire him to go get Matt Patricia, who was just terrible. Was just terrible. And now we're on to somebody else. It's like, you know what? Maybe get Caldwell on the phone again. Just say, Jim, can you come back? Because we're lost without you. It is, it's incredible for a sport that says, you know, we're the ultimate team sport, and this is a meritocracy, and only the strong sort of, like, you know what? The playing field isn't level here. The playing field is just not level.
That's the thing about the NFL, though. If you're not producing in 2 to 3 years, you're done. You know, like, if you don't have instant results, it seems like you're done. You don't really get that like 5 or 6 years to prove yourself. Like, you got to do it right away or you're gone. And even if you do it, like Jim Caldwell did, you gotta do it better. You know, making the playoffs isn't enough. You got to go farther. You got to get there. You got to get this. And I don't envy that job. Like, being a head coach in the NFL, it's, if you're not good in the first couple of years, you may as well start packing your bags.
Didn't Campbell get a 6-year contract, though? Like,
something like just, that, yeah.
Just awesome. Jim Caldwell, who's now two coaches ago for the Lions, 11-5, 7-9, 9-7, 9-7 for a total record of 36-28, and I'm pretty sure the Lions have not had a winning season since then because points at everything. It is amazing, the NFL. And despite having the Rooney Rule, one of six coaches is a person of color in this hiring cycle. We wait to see who will take the Houston Texans job, because they may have to reach for that one pretty, pretty far. It is 4:27. We will go to break. Marshall Ferguson of TSN 1150, the voice of the Ticats. We'll talk some CFL, which team's doing the best job of re-upping its players. If you want to weigh in, hit us up on the Twitter feed at SportsCage. It's brought to you by Bodog.net. Check out the largest selection of odds and props at Bodog.net. Make a play. One big number for this day is 3. The Riders have 3 players in the top 10 of CFL.ca's ranking of remaining free agents. Cam Judge at 3, Charleston Houston at 6, and Ed Gainey at 10. Solomon Elamimian also appears on the list, a little further down at 27. The Riders have done a nice job getting back or renegotiating some important pieces, but had they done the best job in the league? We'll discuss that with Marshall Ferguson next on The Cage. One big number brought to you by Smart Investing Solutions. Don't guess with your money. Call Brian Golly of Smart Investing Solutions, 546-2533. Yes. Shaq Evans is Batman will be on every poll I put on Twitter for the rest of my life. I'm just saying. Is it a good idea to hire Dan Campbell? Yes, no, Shaq Evans is Batman. Your options coming. Luke is a classic. All the guests of the show appear on the Western Pizza Hotline. Don't feel like cooking tonight? No problem. Just order Western Pizza with contactless delivery available. Our pizza man for this time is Marshall Ferguson of TSN 1150. He's the voice of the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Marshall, what's up?
I'm good, DT. It's been too long, man. How are you holding up?
You know what? Every time somebody re-signs somebody or restructures somebody, I get more and more excited. So I'm going to, like, 7 days after free agency officially opens, I'm just going to explode and be super depressed because there's now no more activity to discuss. This has been great so far, though.
Yeah, I agree. It's been great entertainment. The thing I find funny about it, though, is because it's kind of like we've all had our heart broken in 2020 before, that I'm looking at it and I'm saying to myself the exact same thing as you, where every single time I'm like, oh, man, that's a nice piece, or, ooh, I wonder if that guy will get to free agency. And then in the back of my head, I just keep going, when are we going to play?
I'm like, yeah, exactly.
When are we actually going to get to see these guys on the field? Like, even seeing, for me, as somebody who loves covering U sports and watching the draft coverage kind of come together throughout the year, I love that process of guys that go throughout their third and fourth year, and they go East-West Bowl, and they make their way towards the CFL, and then they get drafted, and they get their opportunity, and they make a training camp, and then they get to go and prove themselves against all these veterans. And I see all the rookies getting signed in just these swaths. Like, Hamilton signed 8 of their 10 draft picks. I saw Calgary signed a bunch of guys. Saskatchewan signed a bunch of guys the other day. And I look at it, and I'm like, man, that's got to be so exciting for them. And I'm like, but there's definitely got to be a clause in that contract that says if for some reason we start late or we don't end up playing for some reason, that it basically gets voided and we're all back at it again. So, again, I don't want to be negative, but fingers crossed that's all not something we have to deal with again. But it is something that crosses my mind every time I see a little sprinkle of news here and there.
Yeah, it absolutely would. While you're in that vein, Clayton brought up a super good question to me yesterday. We were talking about Nelson Lacombo in the CFL's, You certainly saw it, the top 20 prospects of from the scouting combine. Lacombo had dropped from 14 to 19, and it seemed like Canadian kids playing at Canadian schools were getting shuffled down, and American guys would come in to replace them. Did you make anything of movement, like Lacombo down 5 spots, the kid from Laurier down to 20? Did you make anything of that in particular?
Yeah, I think it's expected, honestly. Like, when you don't play a season, and the evaluators are going to feel less confident in some guys because let's be real about this. If you and I were to take a full year off of calling CFL games on radio, which we have,
yep.
I would feel less confident in myself going into my first opportunity to call a game again. Like, it's going to take me a little while to get used to doing that. We're such creatures of habit, and there's such a rhythm to the football world that when you take away that rhythm, I think you end up seeing the people who weren't involved in football for an entire year, they're going to be discounted, whether it be fair or unfair, by some of the evaluators. So I totally get why that happens. It's unfair in the big picture, but it's honest, right? Because I think it would be a lie to all of us to say, you know what, I haven't seen Nelson Lacumbo play this year, but I've seen 17 different guys from the NCAA who are all competing at a highest level. I'm going to move Nelson Lacumbo up because I think he's great. Well, yeah, I mean, we all think he's great. We all think that there's a lot of great U Sports talent out there year in, year out. But when it's not on the field in front of you, it's easy to kind of say, okay, we got to take a step back here. Does it mean anything at the end of the day? Absolutely not, because wherever they get drafted, they're going to get signed to a team. If they get signed to a team and they prove that they should have been rated higher, they're in business, they're in the CFL, and that's the end goal for all of them.
I said this yesterday, zero chance Nelson Lacumbo gets to be the 19th pick. He's gone before 19 in the draft.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, perfect. All right, let's talk about some CFL action. Hamilton was the team I was absolutely terrified of as the 2020 season approached. I was, you know, had we gotten to the point where we projected the season, I would have said, hey, Hamilton's going to go 16-2 and win the Grey Cup. And then I look at them now and I go, oh, man, they're doing a real fine job of getting guys back. And so far this season with the offensive line, defensive studs, they're doing a real nice job of getting the band back together.
Yeah, they pieced it together nicely. I think they had such a solid foundation basically from 2018 onwards, which a lot of that is just the June Jones effect, as you know, where he came in and he was kind of determining player talent. And it's funny, I was talking to Braylon Addison the other day, just off air and kind of catching up with him after he signed back with the Ticats. And I was like, tell me your actual journey of how you got here. And I think he's a great example for where this base of talent came from that we're talking about. Because for a long time with Kent Austin, there were very good players, but they were in and out and up and down. And there was, you know, American receivers that would be here and like Terrell Sinkfield would get a shot down in the States and become a DB. And you'd be kind of backfilling. It's like, well, Jasper Collins, if anybody remembers that name, it's like, okay, sure. But it wasn't really a world beater. And then you get a Braylon Addison. So I was talking to Addison, and I said, like, how did you get? And he goes, well, I basically was out of football. I got cut by the Chicago Bears because they drafted Tariq Cohen. I go home, and I get a call from the Toronto Argonauts after a while, and they end up saying, hey, we thought you retired. And he's like, no, I've been sitting on my couch playing Fortnite for the last 6 months. Like, where the hell have you guys been? And he ends up going to Toronto, and he said that he actually flew to Edmonton for an early season game, and they said, hey, Armani Edwards is going to be injured. We are going to have to play you in this game. He said, okay, fantastic. I've been waiting for this. I get to actually have some film. It'll help me either here or down the road. And then he doesn't end up playing because 5 minutes before the game, they're like, just kidding, Armani's fine. Sorry, we flew you all the way to Edmonton and you're not going to play in the game. And they said, but seriously, like, stay ready because, you know, Armani, he's not really that healthy right now. He's been dinged. He's got some stuff going on. Be ready. 2 days later, the Argos cut him. And when the Argos cut him, he flew back to Houston, where he's from, and he ended up getting a call from Sean Burke of the Ticats and said, hey, June Jones remembers you from high school. Is there any chance that you'd like to be able to come to Hamilton? And he said, I just left Toronto. Like, it was literally a 48-hour swing where he ended up finding out Toronto to Houston to Hamilton. I'm pretty sure that that's a waste of gas mileage. I'm pretty sure he could have done that more effectively. But when I heard that story from him, I'm just like, yeah, that was when it all kind of began, where they started building up the names that you know, and some of them obviously dropped into your lap, like Chris Van Zyl, where the Argos just decided we don't need him, we don't have a spot for him in this, we think he's probably getting close to the end and he's costing us a bunch of money and all the rest. But they've been able to make the money work somehow, some way, around a lot of these bigger name guys, and bringing them back consistently is a very Kyle Walters Winnipeg style approach, I think, from Drew Alemang and Sean Burke right now. It served them well, certainly in the East Division. The ultimate goal is still, it feels like, a long ways off, even though they've got all these names coming back.
Yeah.
It's tough to run back a 15-3 undefeated at home type season. So I think everyone's going to be very cautiously optimistic once they get the band back together and see whether or not they can find that magic. But again, so much of that is leaning on the quarterback spot, as you know. Like, you guys found magic in Fajardo in 2019 out there, and that obviously propelled everything forward for the Riders organization as a whole. The Ticats, whether they go Masoli, whether they go Evans, whether both of them are in training camp or one of them is in training camp, one of them's traded or one of them ends up signing somewhere else, whatever happens, the quarterback position's got to be great for them, because otherwise not a whole lot else matters.
That is 100% true. He's the voice of the Ticats, Marshall Ferguson, with us on the Western Pizza Hotline. I look at this and I go, okay, well, Brandon Banks, okay, absolutely positively had to have him back. You mentioned Addison. Nobody, no receiver ran out of the backfield more in 2019 than Braylon Addison. That guy must be an absolute nightmare for defenders. They got back, as I went through the list, all their American receivers, so depth there. Canadian and Americans in the backfield. That's great. Simone's back. Ted Laurent, Jagera Davis, and Julian Hauser, who absolutely popped on the end in 2019. Jamal Roll, like, Hamilton, I mean, especially compared to the other teams in the East, Hamilton, in getting these guys to come back and convince them that, yeah, it feels like they believe that, man, 2021 is going to be the year we thought 2020 was.
Yeah, and Orlando Steinauer is the reason for all of that, right? Like, you use the word belief right there, and I know that it's cliche and all the rest, but Orlando's got this really cool air about him. And it's not just that he is an excitable guy and he's high energy, and it's not that he coached a lot of these guys as a defensive coordinator before becoming their head coach, or, like, all that stuff plays into it, but it's literally his day-to-day, the way he talks to them, the way that he coaches them, the way that he leads practice, the way that he directs his coordinators and positional coaches underneath him to lead practice, the energy they try to carry. And everybody tries to create that, right? Like, you could take you, me, and nine other guys right now and be like, let's go coach peewee football and let's have lots of energy. And we would. But then it's the technical expertise that goes along with that energy. And then it's the preparation that goes along with it. And that's, I think, another reason why when we see all of these guys being able to sign back on, and the reason why they kind of believe that they can do something great, it has a lot to do with that. It's just that the fact that the guy at the front of the room has so much confidence. Like, I've never seen Orlando Steinauer, even in a moment of weakness like the Grey Cup, where you're getting obliterated from start to finish by Winnipeg, not once did he bow his head. Not once did he, you know, it looked like Kent Austin so many times where he's throwing pages or he's ripping his headset off. Or there's none of that. Like, that's not who he is, and he just gives that to the entire roster. But I'm with you, man. The thing that I find most interesting is their ability to be able to, I guess, bring back, like I say, a lot of these different names that you would hope that they would. But then there's other names out there that they kind of systematically, slowly let go of, right? And what I mean by that is, like, Mike Jones goes to Edmonton. Yeah. He was their wideside wide receiver for the last couple of years. I know you've looked at his drop percentages. They're probably not fantastic. I'm just saying that off the top of my head. But the idea of kind of not pushing him out, not releasing him outright, and not making it a big stink, but just kind of quietly moving on, and then, oh, look, there's Jalen Acklin, and he's one of the best rookies in the league. It's like they accrue talent, I think, in a real kind of sneaky, quiet way where it doesn't get talked about a ton, and then you look up at the end of the game, and you're like, well, Brandon Banks had six catches, and Jalen Acklin had four, and when Luke Tasker was with the team, then he had himself three, four catches and a lot of them on second down and it just kind of goes on. And then you have, of course, factor in having a backfield that I'm really interested to see how Don Jackson fits in, because when they re-signed him, he's the first guy that they had come off of their list of signees last year who have never actually worn the Ticats uniform in the season thus far, because of course they signed and there was no season. So when he comes in and I look at his production grades, when he was with Calgary in just a rotation of Romar Morris was in for a little while and Don Jackson was there. And then there was one or two others that were getting, yeah, exactly. Terry Williams was one that came over there from Edmonton. So when I'm looking at what they did with him in the backfield, and I think, well, I wonder if Cameron Marshall is the type of template that you use for a Don Jackson. I feel like Don Jackson's in for a big year. And that's even saying the Ticats don't really care to run the ball all that much, but when he gets the football, and if he's going to get it at a decent clip, even for a Ticat standard of what a decent clip means, I think he's going to be productive. And then, again, it all comes back to who is accurate in the backfield and who is delivering the football where it needs to go, because there's so many different pieces to this team that I think they have a very high ceiling, but that just means that they haven't been allowed to play football yet, and that's the same for everybody, unfortunately, right now.
Yeah, that is absolutely true. We'll dive into which team is doing the best. I want to bring Clayton Croker in on this one. Clayton, drop it in here with Marshall Ferguson.
Yeah, a couple CFL questions for you here, Marsh. The Ticats, going back to their quarterbacks, let's say they go the trade route. So they want to trade one of their guys. Is there a team in the CFL that would want them? I mean, obviously they're quality quarterbacks, but I'm looking at the depth chart. It seems like most teams have their QB1 already. So would there be suitors if the Ticats wanted to trade Dane Evans or Jeremiah Masoli?
I think there would be. The scenario that I'm really interested in right now, which is purely hypothetical, and I haven't talked to anybody about any of this, but is, you know, I hate to say that one guy deserves to start over the other, because I think they both deserve to be in Hamilton. I think they both deserve the opportunity to be able to fight for the starting quarterback job. Jeremiah Masoli's been passed over so many times in his career just because he's been the other guy, whether it's been with Kolaros or whether it's been even with Dane Evans, and this idea of like, well, you know, Jeremiah was fun for a while, but Dane's the future. It's like we're constantly trying to push Jeremiah out the door, it feels like, from the Hamilton fan base. I've never really understood that. I think he's an incredibly unique talent. He's different than you usually have at that position when it comes to the way he disseminates the football, the way he plays the game, some of the throws that he makes that you love, some of the throws he makes you don't love. But for me, if I were to say that there's one or one or the other that's not in Hamilton going into a training camp, assuming it's on a normal schedule, May, June, July, all the rest this year, I would say that if for some reason, let's say Matt Nichols just hates the idea of not getting any signing bonus money in Toronto, and let's say that Nick Arbuckle doesn't get his deal done as quickly as possible, because it's his first time to be able to make real money as a starting quarterback in professional football, and if he says, hey, I'm worth this much and I've got a young family now, which he does, then I think that he might be kind of holding out and playing a little bit of hardball with Marcel Desjardins in Ottawa. If that happens, I could totally foresee a situation where he's like, you know what? Arbuckle goes, I really like playing for Ryan Dinwiddie when I was in Calgary with him. I think I'm just going to make my way down the road and go to Toronto. Well, if that happens, I don't know where Matt Nichols ends up, but I do know that Ottawa immediately becomes an extremely enticing destination for any type of trade value when it comes to quarterbacks. Because if you are Marcel Desjardins, you're coming off the year that you just had, where you had Dominic Davis and Jonathan Jennings playing some of the worst quarterback play in the CFL of the last 5 years. If you're going to end up having those two guys the previous season, then you have a pandemic year, and you're going to come out of the gates after that with a young quarterback that you're trying to develop with Paul Appelese? No. Paul Appelese needs a quarterback. Like, make no mistakes about it. He needs somebody there, and he can coach anybody, but he needs somebody that he can use to get the football spread all over the place in his creative offense. Could that just be Matt Nichols? Absolutely. You could see Ottawa and Toronto flipping it, but I think for what Lapalisse likes to do, I would say this. Jeremiah Masoli, in terms of the run game, even coming off an ACL, I think he's got a lot of the flavors of Chris Streffler, not as a power runner, but as being able to run a lot of that spread offense and not even necessarily zone read, just creative things, DT. You know what I'm talking about, oh, yeah. Whether it's reverse pivot from the pistol, being able to bootleg out to the side, being able to do things, flipping the ball underneath to running backs and slot backs as they're crossing through the line of scrimmage. Like, he does all of that stuff really naturally from his days at Oregon and Ole Miss in the NCAA. So I think that, honestly, Matt Nichols, yes, the relationship makes fun, makes sense. It could be a lot of fun for them in Ottawa. But I could see Masoli in Ottawa. I could see Arbuckle in Toronto, Vernon Adams Jr. in Montreal, and Dane Evans as the solo starter in Hamilton. I could see that. Is any of that going to come to fruition? I have absolutely no clue. We'll find out in a couple of weeks.
Really quickly, when it comes to the Argos, you were kind of talking about Matt Nichols, McLeod Bethel-Thompson. If you're the head coach there, who do you go with? I always thought that McLeod Bethel-Thompson, he kind of got like a Jeremiah Masoli. People are always looking to move away from him. Do you think McLeod Bethel-Thompson could win a job over Matt Nichols in Toronto?
I think that he could, but I also think that the thing that has buoyed McLeod Bethel-Thompson's career in the CFL over the last couple of years is garbage time passing yards. And there's a lot of times where you're watching an Argos game, not just in 2019, but really in his career, where you're saying to yourself, they're kind of out of it, and they're just throwing for their lives to stay in it. Because even when James Wilder Jr. was at the height of his powers, you were still throwing to him out of the backfield a whole bunch and trying to spread the ball around in ways that didn't necessarily always make a lot of sense, but that's probably going to be a relatively run-heavy offense, I would have to think. They're trying to build a little bit of a bully with the old OC from Saskatchewan and Stephen McAdoo. So if they decide to go with somebody that's just like a veteran and they can't get an Arbuckle and they don't get in on Masoli, I could totally see them going with him and being able to earn that job. But he's going to have to make some throws, and he's going to have to make them against defenses that aren't playing cover four, cover six, whatever, and bailing out and just giving him everything underneath.
I know DT doesn't think about this in the booth, but as a former quarterback, and a very good one too, do you ever think about the situation where a quarterback, like all three of them go down, and then Orlando Steinhauer calls to you in the booth, and you're the first play-by-play guy to all of a sudden call the first half and then play the second half?
So, know what's funny about this is that the pandemic has been awful for a hell of a lot of reasons, and one of the positives that I've taken out of it, aside from having a beautiful baby boy that I spend all my days with at home now, which is great, is that I've reinvested myself in working out. So
oh, no.
I've literally I've been in my garage where I've built like this crazy home gym setup that's got mirrors on the wall and it's got, you know, Buffalo Bills flags all over the place and McMaster Marauder helmets and all these different things. And I've been trying to get in there for an hour and a half kind of per day. And I've enjoyed the hell out of getting back to working out. I haven't done it since I left university about 6 years ago. So the thought has crossed my mind about how cool of a story it would be. With that being said, I haven't even thrown a tennis ball in like 5 years. So I'm pretty sure I'd be awful.
Yeah. Man, I remember you chucking for McMaster. You'd be just fine out there.
Well, I don't know if you knew this, Marshall, but Clayton is a CJFL record holder. I didn't know if you knew this.
No, I didn't know that. I'm not up on my CJFL. I need to know more about that stuff because I get so wrapped up in
should
CFL,
I tell him, DT?
In the numbers throughout the year. But hell yeah, that's awesome.
Clayton, you should absolutely tell Marshall what record you hold at the Canadian Junior Football League level.
Is interceptions? Please tell me.
In the 2010 season for the mighty Chilliwack Huskers, in our 0-10 season, I set the Canadian Junior Football League record for most pick sixes thrown. I threw six in eight games.
Well, I will say this. The first time I ever got a chance to start at quarterback, it was the Ontario Varsity Football League. I was in grade 10 going into grade 11, and I wanted an opportunity to start for a team. And so I played for this regional team. We went 0-8. I threw 20 interceptions. And the first game that we ended up losing was 68-7, where I threw four pick sixes in a single game.
Oh,
so I'm right there with you, Clayton. We learn from our mistakes, correct?
You're my spirit animal. I thought I was the only one chucking pick sixes like a boss. This is nice, man.
Hey, man, if you're not throwing, you're not throwing pick sixes. That's the rule of quarterbacking.
Did neither one of you hustle and try to make a tackle on these pick sixes?
No. Okay. You got to protect the money.
You gotta protect the guy. I think at the point where you're throwing your fourth pick six, I just want to throw you out a window. So,
well, the best thing is we didn't even have any backup. So it was like I throw four pick sixes, and my coach is looking down the bench where a roster of about 35 guys, and he's like, you're staying in. Like, there's absolutely nowhere else we can go on this roster.
Oh, that is outstanding. I love it. Pointing out our own foibles. That's what we do best here on the Sports Cage. I love it. Follow Marshall at @TSN_Marsh. You can hear him on TSN 1150. And we only get to see you once this coming season. Only one matchup between the Riders and Ticats.
I know. It's a weird one. It's unfortunate we don't get to cross paths more because I love watching the Riders and Cody Fajardo live. I really do. I think that you guys got a lot of momentum out there, and the Williams-Lambert signing I think is going to be bigger than people realize just because they don't know the full season aspect of it all. But I'll say this on my way out here as well, DT, is that I want to give a shout-out to Warren Woods and his entire family. Obviously, everybody in Hamilton was thinking about him today, and he's a Mohawk alumni, Mohawk College here in Hamilton. Jim Taddy, who I know you know well from your time at TSN, worked with both of us. And Tatman introduced me to Warren Woods. We had him on our station once in a while throughout the year. And this morning on my morning show, we replayed our interview with him the morning after the Humboldt Broncos returned to play out there in Saskatchewan. And it was amazing to hear the joy in his voice and how much he loved being able to tell the stories of the people of Saskatchewan. So it's incredibly sad to have him gone. But at the same time, Saskatchewan and Regina, you guys had a real good one for a real long time, and that's something to be thankful for.
That is very well said. Thank you, brother.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
Marshall Ferguson joining us on the Western Pizza Hotline. It is 4:51. This segment of the show brought to us by Nick's Service in Emerald Park, your local Massey Ferguson Challenger, Rogator, Gleaner, and Fendt dealer. Call 781-1077.
4:53 with the sports ticker. Jets are back on the ice, looking to follow up their stolen win from Tuesday. They take on the Senators again. Game time is 6 o'clock. Habs and Canucks at 8:30. Maple Leafs are awaiting results on Joel Thornton's MRI. The 41-year-old appeared to hurt his arm or wrist in the third period last night. Thornton broke the 1,100 games played mark this season, his 23rd in the NHL. Philadelphia Eagles have hired Nick Sirianni as their new head coach. He's been the offensive coordinator in Indy for the last three seasons. Sports tickers for Bronco Plumbing and Heating, where professional service is guaranteed. They'll treat you right. 781-2090.
From the Molson Coors text line, Dave says, I always got to talk with Mr. Woods at the Pats games. He will definitely be missed. And you hear from Marshall Ferguson, who's all the way out in Hamilton. Just the Woodsy effect, a guy who just wanted to talk to everybody and wanted to just enjoy people. Just enjoy people. There's folks, I kind of like being at home. I kind of like being playing on the computer and hacking numbers into the computer. Some people are people persons, and that would certainly be Warren Woods. We should talk a little hockey, Clayton. Joe Thornton. For a second, I almost forgot he was a Toronto Maple Leaf, which is remarkable when we're bombarded with Leafs content, but may miss what turns out to be an extended period of time after he suffered an injury in the game yesterday. Man, over 1,100 games. That takes a lot of fighting through pain, but this sounds like one that he will not be able to battle through.
Well, I think it's a kick in the pants for Leaf fans because they got a little taste of what Joe Thornton can do to their roster. Like, having a veteran presence in that lineup with a bunch of young guys. I mean, Joe Thornton looked good for the Leafs. A lot of people were worried that he had lost too many steps to keep up with those young guns. But, man, he seemed to be kind of a missing piece kind of player for the first couple of games. And I think that's what sucks about this. It's like, okay, now we got to replace him, you know? So yeah. Hopefully they have someone else to kind of step up. I know the Leafs, you know, they have a lot of money with those four forwards, so their depth's a little bit of an issue. But hopefully it's not too long because I love watching Joe Thornton with the Leafs. I thought it was kind of a gimmicky signing, to be honest, but he looked good. He looked like the Joe of like 5 years ago.
Yeah, veteran impact like that, right? Guys who play a lot of games, have played a lot of games, and every season they're in shape to play a lot more games, even as they get into their 40s. I feel like the residual effects of players like that are just fantastic for, like you mentioned, a team with four younger stars up front. I guess three younger stars. I don't know where the what's his name's at, but younger stars up front can do nothing but benefit from watching a guy like that who knows what it takes to be ready for NHL hockey.
It seems like Joe Thornton is doing what they wanted Jason Spezza to do last year.
Yeah.
Like, when they got Jason Spezza, they were expecting, okay, we got this local boy, he's going to come in at center, win all these face-offs, and be that calming presence. Jason Spezza was a little disappointing last year for the Leafs. He had flashes, but I think he was less than expected. Joe Thornton was like the Jason Spezza 2.0, and people didn't think it was going to work out, but, I mean, Joe Thornton, future Hall of Famer, you don't get to 1,100-plus games for nothing. And it's just a shame that he got injured at this point of the season. I kind of expected it to happen later in the season. But, I mean, the Leafs look like they're going to make the playoffs, so hopefully he can be back for at least their playoff push.
Wow, you're jumping this early, hey?
They look good. I mean, they look really, really good.
4-1, though, dude. 56 games.
I know, but in that North Division, like you said, like there are seven teams, four of them make the playoffs. I mean, let's be real here. Sorry, Ottawa.
Hey.
They're not making the playoffs this year. They look great. They look way better than expected. Don't get me wrong.
That's the 500 Ottawa Senators to you. They're at exactly 500. 1-1-1. Boom.
You get on me for making predictions four games in, and then you're like, oh, yeah, they're 500, man.
No.
Come on.
That's what we call teasing. No, yeah, that's that said, as much as we make fun of the Ottawa Senators, the Jets, when Zinger said stole a win from the Senators two nights ago, it absolutely was a steal. For some reason, the Jets were absolutely outplayed by the Senators. That was remarkable.
Can I just say, I love how sassy Zinger is getting in the rundown yesterday with the George Springer cheating thing, today with the other one. I'm loving it, Zinger, man. Keep it going.
Got a little sass in my blood today.
Yeah.
This week, I guess.
Can you give us a taste of the George Springer once again from yesterday?
What was the George Springer one again? I was like,
Springer cheated his way to a World Series.
Cheated his way to the World Series, yep.
It was the delivery. It was the delivery that made everything. It didn't even, like, emphasize it or anything. Just business as usual. That's why you're a professional, Zinger. You're a professional.
I hope it brought some smiles to some people listening.
What did he say? Did he say that?
Yeah
no, it's outstanding. We will talk to Arash Madani about the cheater, George Springer. 6 years, $150 million he signed with the Jays. Jays fans are alternately super excited about it or shut up. I told you they'd spend a bunch of money about it when for a long time we didn't believe that they might do that. We'll talk to Arash Madani about that coming up on the other side of the news with our friend Ryan McNally. Thanks for being with us, The Sports Cage on 620 CKRM. Kane is in the building. Five 9:06 on a Thursday. It's the Sports Cage on 620 CKRM. The text line for Molson Coors is 306-936-6262. Brought to you by Molson Ultra. 70 calories, 2 grams of carbs, available at all retailers. Please enjoy their product responsibly. Bottom of the clock, we'll hear from Jordan Williams-Lambert, the newest Riders re-signing, about why he wanted to be back in Saskatchewan and what he took away from staying with Cody Fajardo and training with Cody Fajardo during this pause in the football. Let's go to the Western Pizza Hotline for Arash Madani. Arash, what's going on, man?
DT, everything is well. How are you, man?
Not bad at all. Had a little Diet Pepsi during the break. I was going to rant about that. I had a rant about how I need a Diet Pepsi button in the office with Joe Biden apparently took the Diet Coke button out of the White House, the Oval Office in the White House. I need one of those buttons. That'd be great. Just button.
I saw that, and I was thinking of my top three buttons. I think I would have Coke Zero as one. I would have an IPA for a late night, take the edge off, two. And cashews would be number three.
Oh, that's a good one.
Some roasted, salted cashews.
Okay.
Those would be my top three.
Mine would certainly, I'll think about mine. Zinger, think about yours. One of mine would clearly involve Kentucky Fried Chicken. I'm just saying that that's going to be the way that is.
Right.
We haven't noted yet in the show, but a pretty important man in the history of the NFL, Ted Thompson, passed away at the age of, I believe it was 67, for 68 years old. He was the GM of the Packers from 2005 to 2017, which is every era of the Packers seems to be important, but that was the beginning of the Aaron Rodgers era, and a lot of more success was to come.
Well, drafted Aaron Rodgers, successfully managed to get Brett Favre out of there as a franchise icon and have a bit of a seamless transition in bringing Rodgers in. But Derek, I remember two things from covering my first Super Bowl, which was the Super Bowl Green Bay won. One was interviewing Ted Thompson on Media Day, because Green Bay's roster that year, Zinger will remember this, they had two players that they on their roster that they signed as free agents from other teams. The rest of that team was either homegrown or acquired via trade, or they were undrafted free agents. Ryan Pickett, an offensive lineman that they brought over from the Rams, and the great Charles Woodson. Mm-hmm. Other than that, Ted Thompson's philosophy was, we do not go into the free agent market and overpay for guys. And I asked him, well, when does your scouting begin for next season? And he said, Tuesday, 7 a.m. I said, well, what happens if you have a parade to deal with? He said, that would be a good problem to have. We'll deal with that if we need to. That matter of fact about it. Then Sunday night, they win the whole thing, and I'm interviewing him, and he just said, you know, somebody said, how satisfying is this for you? You know, how much joy is there? And he looked at a few of us, and he just said, there's just so much relief.
Yeah.
And I thought that really captured what pro sports and being a pro sports executive is. There's so very little joy. There's just relief. And Ted Thompson passes away far too early, passes away a champion who absolutely did it his way when it came to roster construction.
It's the strangest thing, but for some folks, the degree of emotion you feel, winning even the ultimate prize, winning doesn't feel as strongly as losing feels. They always take losing harder than they appreciate winning. It's remarkable, whether it's the fear of losing or what it is, but they hate losing more than they love winning, it seems sometimes.
Yeah, and just the anguish losing gives mm-hmm. you, and the second guessing and going over. When you win, it's just on to the next one, and it's hard
exactly
to really appreciate it. Tom Brady always said that the day he really appreciated the championship wasn't until months later. It was when they got their rings right before training camp. And then you can actually look at that thing, and he just said you just think back on the journey. You think back on what it took to get there. And there's a great, of course, photo out there on the internet of Brady with like 5 or 6 rings on all his, you know, covering up all his fingers with rings. Damn you, Tom Brady. Why weren't you a Viking?
Well, I mean, you had to go through the Brad Johnson era, and I can't even go down.
Tavares Jackson.
Oh, Tavares Jackson. He was the next big thing. All right, let's talk about the big thing for the Toronto Blue Jays. This is the biggest contract in the history of Canadian sports, right? 6 years and 150, at least in terms of total dollars. 6 years and 150 for George Springer.
Yeah, Pascal Siakam's in the $130 million range. So too was DeMar DeRozan. I think he was a nickel or two less. The biggest signing dollar-wise the Blue Jays ever had was Vernon Wells, and that was a guy that, you know, who was a homegrown guy. He was in the building at $126 million. But, the Jays stuck their neck out last year in the market and paid $80 million for Hyunjin Ryu, a Cy Young finalist. That felt like a big number. George Springer is the biggest free agent on the market in baseball this offseason. He gives the Blue Jays instant credibility. He makes them so much better offensively, defensively. He brings championship pedigree. We'll never look at a garbage can the same with George Springer around. But that is... when you talk about an impact bat, an impact player, an impact addition, leadership-wise, culture, all of those things, the Blue Jays floored baseball by, A, getting him, and they did so by offering him $30 more million than the next team in line. The New York Mets offered Springer reportedly $120, Derek, and the Jays said, no, we're going to open up the vault, and we're going to get the guy who we feel can really improve us up the middle.
To go 6 years on a guy who's 31 is a lot, but a lot of times you don't worry about the back end of contracts like that.
That's right.
Just because
it's the cost of doing business in free agency.
Yeah, exactly. How surprised are you that the prime free agent in baseball this year only commanded $25 million a year? Should we be surprised by that?
We shouldn't, and it has nothing to do with George Springer. It has a little bit to do with his age, but it has almost entirely to do with the fact that teams just played a 60-game season, not 162, and revenues were decimated because of COVID. I mean, they played games this season in front of no fans. There was no money brought in at the gate, at concessions, etc. So there's just less cash to go around, which makes it, Derek, advantage Blue Jays. This is where the Blue Jays had an advantage, that you're not relying on a single owner, and they had totally torn down the 2015 and 2016 team. Even now with Springer in the fold, their payroll is $110 million in and around.
Oh, wow.
They still need to go get pitching, and they can still go get pitching based on what their payroll is at the moment.
I was talking with Colin Lovequist, the Lovetron, everything for our afternoons here on CKRM. I'm a huge baseball fan, and he and I were trying to piece together where Springer will fit in the lineup. Best guess for you, where does Springer fit in the lineup?
I can see him being in the two-hole. If you go with Kevin Biggio as your leadoff hitter and then go Springer in the two-hole, then maybe Bichette hitting third and some way of maneuvering Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Teoscar Hernandez in the 4 or 5 hole. Maybe you bat Springer leadoff. I think it just depends. I don't think there's a set spot for him day to day, because in the new analytics world of baseball and matchups world of baseball and who's hot, you can move him around.
Yeah.
But he can hit all over the place for you, which is just massive to have that kind of flexibility in your lineup.
Plus, I mean, all the cheating that he's done in his career, right? That can only help you bring that veteran cheating experience into the locker room.
If you're not cheating, you're not trying, Derek Taylor. I think a few football coaches told me that along the way.
And as I remember, no player got suspended for any of that, so did they really do anything wrong? It's great. You know, you're a villain when you're on the other guys, and you're the hero when you're on our side. That's great.
Yeah, exactly. He's a bleep, but he's our bleep.
Exactly.
Is how somebody put it to me. I said, hey, that's not a bad way of looking at it.
There you go. He's Arash Madani of Sportsnet with us. Clayton, dive on in here with Arash.
Yeah, pumped to talk to you again, Arash. Talking about the Jays again, do you think that the current Jays outfielders are a little ticked about the Michael Brantley thing? Like, are Grichuk, Gurriel Jr., Teoscar, are they now thinking that management doesn't think they're good enough? Like, they want to replace him with Brantley? What's going through their heads, do you think?
Well, it's the business side of it. Look, I really like Gurriel. I think he's got a ton of upside. But at some point here, and Derek and I have talked about this all the time, this comes down, this is great. George Springer is a phenomenal signing, and if they had gotten Brantley, that would have been fine. That would have been an upgrade for sure. But it's about pitching, and it's about depth in pitching, and it's about starting pitching, and it's about relief pitching, and it's about all the pitching that you can find. So if you go spend and go get Michael Brantley, what then ends up happening is you now have an asset in Lourdes Gurriel Jr. that can get you a real arm or arms in the trade market. And so it's not, there's only one real pitcher left in free agency right now. That's Trevor Bauer. So if you want to go upgrade your staff, and the Blue Jays certainly need to, maybe the way to do so is to trade young, controllable talent. They have now a farm system. They have Gurriel, who's shown what he can do. He's at an affordable salary. He's under team control for two more years. That, to me, suggested how the Blue Jays wanted to approach free agency and how they wanted to go get pitchers.
This next one is more of a journalism question here because, I mean, the reports came out that the Jays got Michael Brantley. It ended up being false. Here come the keyboard warriors from their mom's basement going after the reporters who got it wrong. Like, can you just speak on how hard journalists take it and how bad they feel when something like that happens? Because I don't know if people know just how hard they beat themselves up when something like that happens.
It's a great question, Clayton. It's literally the worst feeling in the world.
Sucks.
Literally the worst feeling in the world professionally that you can have. And it's a reminder, and Derek, I tell our friend Justin Dunk this all the time.
Yeah.
It's being 99% right is 100% wrong. I learned that a long time ago, not in breaking stories, but covering my first Summer Olympics in London. And the message to us was that being 99% right is 100% wrong. Because for Olympians, you need to know their story and tell their story accurately because this is their only shot at it. This is their only moment in the sun. Let's tell their story properly and accurately. Taking a risk is a tough deal, but there have been times, guys, and I have to tell you this, breaking a story and being the first on a story is a hell of a rush, and it's a hell of a drug. But the worst feeling you think you can have is knowing you have a scoop, but not being able to go with it because you don't have it confirmed by three sources. That's my rule of thumb. By three different areas. Okay, I get a tip from Derek, then I'm going to go take a look at it and get two other people outside of the CKRM building to confirm it. And I always have to remind myself, hey, man, as good as it feels to get this story and get this scoop, if I'm uneasy on hitting send on it, then the feeling of, oh, my God, I got this wrong is way worse. And you want to make sure that your reputation is what you report is iron tight.
Yeah. Yeah, and yeah, we won't bring up the specific example this summer, but yeah, there was something you were just pounding on. You had it, you knew you had it, but you didn't know 100% you had it, right? And you can't be 99%. You got to be 100% or else. Because
yeah.
People,
you and I were texting about it for what, 3 weeks, Derek?
Yeah, people don't remember.
I'm close. I'm just not there.
Yeah. People don't remember the 99 times you were right. They'll call you forever out on the one time you were wrong. So you have to be very careful. Arash, I know this is probably near and dear to your heart, but This just came in from the Times of London. I just saw this story. I don't know if you've seen the top line of the story. The Japanese government has privately concluded the Tokyo Olympics will have to be canceled because of the coronavirus, and the focus is now on securing the games for the city in the next available year, 2032. Oh, boy. Yikes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and that's that's not the Sun newspaper. That's the Times in London. Oh, boy. That's well, I gave you 47 phone calls to make
sunk
now.
Sunk costs.
Oh,
yeah, I believe the sunk costs on the Olympics, guys, for the Tokyo Olympics, are $7.8 billion.
Come on.
That will just that will just be set on fire.
Oh boy.
Like billion with a B.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't just push back and give them 2024 because that's not how it. How it works. That's we'll see how that one flushes out.
No, 2024 is Paris.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you can't,
2028
just,
is LA.
You can't just shuffle everybody back 4 years, right? That's the thing. There's so much planning has to go these things that, oh boy, I hope that's not the case and that's not how it plays out. But that from the Times of London posted an hour ago. Arash, thanks so much, brother. Great to talk to you.
Okay, boys.
He is Arash Madani of Sportsnet with us on the Western Pizza Hotline. The Madani Report is brought to you by Smart Investing Solutions. If you're unsure about what to do with your investments, call Brian Golly for some free financial advice. Call 546-2533. We will see about this Olympic story from the Times of London. Next up, we'll hear from Riders receiver Jordan Williams-Lambert. Back in green, we'll hear why he wanted to be back and about his burgeoning friendship with one Cody Fajardo. It's next on The Cage.
5:24 with the afternoon rush. BC Lions have re-signed Canadian receiver Shaq Johnson, and the Steelers and quarterback Dwayne Haskins have signed a one-year contract. That from ESPN's Adam Schefter. Haskins was a free agent after the Washingtons released him late in the season. Capital star Alex Ovechkin is one of four players on their COVID list. He's likely out for four games, and the league fined the Caps $100,000 for violating COVID protocols. Afternoon Rush is for oddshark.net. For sports odds, find your edge at oddshark.net.
The Washingtons just flows, right? It just flows so much better.
Oh, I felt so good coming off the tongue there.
Well, like, the people who insist on the Washington football team, come on,
nah.
Just the Washingtons. Just make it easy on yourself.
They got to keep that number on their helmet, too. It's so unique and sexy. I like it.
I agree with that 100%. Yeah. I like that a lot. There's almost no chance they keep it because they'll want to put their logo on it and ruin it for everybody. But, no, I'm with you on that 100%. It is 5:25. Jordan Williams-Lambert met with the media today. Of course, they announced yesterday that they had re-signed Williams-Lambert for the 2021 season after he played three games with them in 2020. A couple of little revelations. He just kind of sprinkled in some bombs about the 2019 season with us. First up, JWL, about why he wanted to re-sign in Saskatchewan.
I mean, just the interest, the interest they showed over, you know, the COVID period and just providing for me, you know, while having my young one. I don't know if you guys knew I had a young one, but he's now going to be going on 11 months to where just, you know, providing for me during this time. I feel like it wasn't about the money. It was more about just getting the opportunity to continue playing and hopefully pursuing, you know, that opportunity I missed out on a year ago. So we'll see. See how my health holds up, you know.
Did you consider trying free agency, seeing what other interest there was from the CFL?
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, I took pride in what I built with, you know, that specific organization. I take pride in the fan base they have there. I take pride in my receiver coach I have there to where I feel like I owe to them before any other team in that league. Opportunity to go for a Grey Cup. So if that's the route I have to go, then that's the route I have to go. And I'm not sure, is the Grey Cup in Sask still? I know the year has changed, but I didn't know what the update was on that.
Yeah, so Hamilton this coming year and then Regina in 2022 for the Grey Cup.
Okay, so they moved it. Okay, well, I mean, we'll see how it goes. I thought it would have been cool.
You said your health with a little bit of a giggle. Are you dealing with any health or injury things go right now?
Nah, I mean, actually this time off has given me time to really work on a lot of things I was dealing with since college. So, you know, I think just seeing the benefits of having this time off, working on some of the deficiencies I've had health-wise, you know, I'm looking forward to see how it correlates on the field.
What kind of things were those? What kind of things have you been working on?
Just, you know, flexibility. You know, unfortunately, with the Chicago incident, I kind of lacked on, you know, having a masseuse and taking pride in, you know, taking care of my body that way, to where I feel like, you know, some of the injuries I went through over that camp were kind of due to, you know, not having a massage therapist or, you know, having that time put in, to where I feel like I kind of, you know, didn't put forth my best foot as far, well, put my best foot forward as far as, you know, interviewing with that team. So it was kind of aggravating how it played out, but, you know, the fact that I was able to make it through that and, you know, come up to Canada and do what I could, and only to find out nothing was broken, or, you know, and I don't know if you guys knew I had a foot injury, but after I had a hamstring and a foot injury, to where I feel like that could have limited my play the previous year where I was playing with the organization, and obviously my play with Chicago. So I know the fact I made it through the season healthy and there was no, you know, serious injuries. And, you know, I even went out to throw with Cody. I've been through with Isaac, you know, just to show that I'm still interested in, you know, growing that opportunity as much as I have an opportunity here. I take pride in the opportunity there. So I know I don't get to display that often, but, you know, I try to as much as I can.
When you went out to Nevada to train with Cody, what was that like?
It was cool. I actually had a lot of mark off the bucket list things. We played a full 18 rounds of golf, 18 holes, whatever you call it. We went hiking. I got to see Lake Tahoe and Reno. You know, those are play calls where I was like, okay, it makes sense why they call, you know, some of those play calls. And of course, just seeing what Cody was about, you know, I did play at a time where none of those players were, you know, very active in the organization now, to where I was cool with Zach Calero. So here kind of Zach Calero's feedback was kind of surprising to me, to where, you know, I did want to talk to Cody and see what he was about, because my agent is the agent of Bo Levi and Calero. So it was going to be interesting to see what he was about.
What did you get to know about him? And did that factor in, like, just getting to know him a little bit better into re-signing with the, you know, you mentioned you wanted to know how he threw, but tell us about that relationship, how it grew.
Well, I think the fact that he allowed me into his home alone was, I don't know, that was different for me, to where I instantly had respect, because everybody else didn't, you know, make the trip. It was supposed to be a receiver quarterback, and everybody backed out. So I was like, well, I'm not going to back out. I guess he was probably, I kind of wanted to see what he's about and to see his work ethic, to see where he comes from, to see how people can kind of downplay what he's built, I think is kind of crazy. So I think going out there and, you know, seeing a new place and being in a new environment, to where it kind of opened my horizon on the different aspects and, you know, different mindsets, I think it was pretty cool to experience.
As Ryan's receiver Jordan Williams Lambert talking about Clayton, it warms my heart and it perks up your ears when you go, oh yeah, Cody Fajardo said, hey, just come stay at my house and we'll practice together. And like you said, not everybody would do that. That's really cool. And as a Riders fan, you go, oh, that guy's serious about improving and connecting to his receivers. And then JWL making the trip is serious about connecting to his quarterback.
Having a great relationship with your receivers is such a valuable tool if you're a quarterback. Like, if you got a bunch of Terrell Owens and Chad Johnsons out there, like a bunch of diva prima donnas doing their own thing, you don't want that. You want those guys like JWL who are like, can I come out and throw with you, man? Can I come live with you? Let's go play some golf. Let's be buddies. Like, that's music to Riders fans' ears right there, because, man, just all this receiver news this week just seems to keep getting better and better and better. And I love how he's like, you know what, I feel like I owe the Riders. You know, I feel like I owe them right now. He's going to be so motivated to play. And yeah, that little press conference there kind of got me jacked up. I can't wait to see what he's going to bring to the field this year.
Everything just turns it up a little bit, right? Just a little bit more and a little bit more. I asked Jordan Williams Lambert in the news conference, hey, you know, in 2018, you were almost exclusively inside. In 2019, you were almost exclusively playing to the outside. Where will you go? He kind of pushed that off a little bit. So I tried again. I said, hey, you know, don't feel like you need to answer this. But you did this and now you did this. Where would you in a perfect world be more comfortable? He didn't really discuss that too terribly much. That's why you didn't hear it there. He talked about he wants to make an impact. He really wanted to give – it seemed like he didn't want to discredit some of the people who played there. He talked about Naaman Roosevelt and how – which made me think, oh, is he going to take over Naaman's spot? And will they end up going with three Americans and two Canadians at receiver? So it's very clear from his stats so far in the Canadian Football League, limited sample, but – He likes the inside more than the outside, statistically speaking. And how could you not? Being closer to the ball means there are more balls for you and more touchdowns and more chances to improve and develop as a player. So I thought it wasn't the answer I was looking for as a football nerd, but I thought, okay, well, that's a respectful answer because you don't want to trample on the figurative grave of Naaman Roosevelt, a guy who's now moved on from the Riders.
Exactly, and I, for one, hope that he plays more inside than outside because,
yes,
as an offensive coordinator, you really want that big, huge target as an inside slot back. It makes all the difference, like on a 2nd and 5, a 2nd and 7, where you need that first down late in the game. We just need like an 8-yard hook or a little slant over the middle. That's when Jordan Williams-Lambert shines, getting those yards over the middle with the big linebackers, those greasy yards. I, for one, hope he stays inside all season long because I think that's where he's going to be dominant in the CFL.
Yeah, that's you said exactly what Naaman Roosevelt was in 2019, right? Oh, the sticks are at 9, I'm going to get to 10, and I get hit immediately, but I make the catch, first down Riders. How many times did he pull that up in critical situations? The Riders will definitely need somebody in that chain-moving role.
Exactly, especially if the run game is struggling, like having that big receiver with just mitts you can trust. Like, that's the best thing about Jordan Williams-Lambert. I don't remember him really dropping too many balls. Like, that hand strength, like I was talking about yesterday, he's got such hand strength, he just goes and gets the ball. Quarterback's best friend when you have a guy that can catch like that, and they're hanging out off the field too. That's such a nice little positive for Rider fans, knowing that they're buddies.
I believe you talked long enough for me to pull it up. I had Jay Will with 3 drops on 83 targets in 2018, which is a really nice rate. His depth of target, he was never super far downfield, or at least on average wasn't. It was about 9 yards downfield, so quite short, but in that guy who's operating in just the range you're talking about, 3 drops. So, yeah, there was nothing in my mind to be concerned about in 2018 from what we saw from Williams-Lambert. We shall see what it means when Jason Moss gets his hands in there and starts stirring it up, and a pinch of this and a splash of that and Newt's eyes and Williams-Lambert feet and what he can concoct for the Riders offense for the 2021 season. It is 5:36. We will go to break. On the other side, CFL.ca has its top 30 remaining free agents. 3 Riders in the top 10 we shall discuss. Please do bring us your thoughts at SportsCage on Twitter or the text line. The Molson Coors text line is 306-936-6262. Who is the most important remaining Riders free agent? Twitter feed brought to you by Bodog.net. Check out the largest selection of odds and props at Bodog.net. Make a play. .538 on the Sports Cage. If you miss any of today's show, get the Sports Cage on demand for the Canadian Brew House. Enter to win a trip to your favorite team's home opener next season. Football lives at the CBH. 6:05, Craig Adam, former Sportsline anchor and co-worker of Warren Woods, will join us. We'll talk about Woodsy, who was taken from us much too soon yesterday, but great memories he has left behind for sports fans all throughout Regina and our province. CFL.ca has posted a list. Oh, lists are the best, Clayton. Aren't lists just the greatest?
You're a big list guy, hey?
Oh, it just makes people so happy or mad, but people, the reason we're talking about it, because I love lists so much. You rank that guy ahead of that guy? That show ahead of that show? Ooh, okay. I love it.
I can get with the TV show list. That's where I get very, very passionate. Sports, I'm just kind of like, okay, we'll see what happens, because I've learned in my 30 years on this planet, Derek, that sports are very unpredictable. But when it comes to TV lists, I can do that all day, as yesterday proved.
But TV isn't unpredictable? Like, did
it's scripted, Derek.
Yeah, but unpredictable. Like, oh, man, season one of Yellowstone was great, but then season three was exactly the same as season two, just they put in different white people. Like, come on. Like, that's who would have predicted that?
You're right. You're right. I take it back. I take it all back.
That's all good. Who would have thought that the Simpsons would have 12 great seasons, two mediocre ones, and then 16 that are just totally forgettable? Who would have thought?
Me. Yeah. 12 years, though, that's a pretty good run. That's 12 years of absolute, like, comedy classics. Very, very good run.
Very good. All right, well, let's get to the list. CFL.ca, top 30 pending free agents. Number one, Jeremiah Masoli of the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Kind of tough to argue with a starting quarterback being number one on this list in my mind, Clayton.
Absolutely, especially when it's Jeremiah Masoli. I think because he's been so injured the past couple of seasons, people forget, like, just how explosive this guy is. And when he was chucking it, like, when he's on, he's on. He's like a Drew Brees. He is so accurate, and he can get outside the pocket with his quick feet. He's a real good quarterback when he's healthy, but that's the thing. He's got to stay healthy. He's starting to get a little run down.
Yeah, posted a video yesterday of he's now well on the other side of his ACL injury, and he wanted to prove it on social media. Did a pretty good job. Number two, BC Lions wide receiver Brian Burnham. Number three, we come to the first rider, one Cameron Judge, linebacker of your Saskatchewan Roughriders, the number three free agent, according to CFL.ca.
Happy thoughts, DT. Happy thoughts. Let's hope he's not on this list for long here, because, man, Riders need him. He's such a ratio buster, and I don't know, he's just so explosive on the field. He was turning into a leader on that Rider defense as well. Like, you could just kind of see his swagger come out, I think, the last season that the Riders played. So, again, happy thoughts, like we said yesterday. Happy thoughts. Hopefully he's not on this list for too much longer.
Exactly. Number four, Enoch Mwamba, the Canadian middle linebacker of the Montreal Alouettes. Interesting to see the list that has Judge ahead of Mwamba on it. Is Mwamba the reigning most outstanding Canadian? Number five, Greg Ellingson, the wide receiver of the Edmonton football team. And he becomes an interesting one to me with the signing of Jordan Williams-Lambert, or the re-signing of Jordan Williams-Lambert of, well, I had this, between us girls, Clayton, I had this kind of pipe dream that Greg Ellingson would rock the number 82 for the Riders. But when you've signed up Shaq Evans and Kyron Moore and Jordan Williams-Lambert, and you've let Kenny Stafford go, I kind of look at that and go, yeah, I think they might be done with the veteran American receivers.
Could you imagine, though? Like,
gosh.
Greg Ellingson is a Rider. That would be the possibilities of a Jason Moss offense as well. When you got two studs like a Kyron Moore and Shaq Evans, too, that'd be a dream come true for Cody Fajardo. But I don't think it's going to happen. I mean, as Lloyd Christmas would say, telling me there's a chance.
Yeah.
But I
could see you put Shaq and Kyron together. Jay Will plays that number three spot. Ellingson is traditional number two. But the re-signing of Jordan Williams-Lambert gives me pause at that one ever coming. So Cam Judge at three. At number six of your Saskatchewan Roughriders, one Charleston Hughes. And I feel like six might be a little low in an era where everybody's signing one-year deals for Charleston.
I think his age plays a factor here. Like, Charleston is 37, some of the guys on the list. I mean, not a lot of them are crazy young. I guess Cam Judge is a little younger than most of them. But yep. I don't know why he is lower on this list, too. I mean, Charleston Hughes has proved over the last three seasons that age isn't really a factor to him. He is the most, well, him and Willie Jefferson, like, the most dominant D lineman in the league. And he proves it over and over again. And the fact that he's number six, I don't know.
That's
like,
a surprise.
Hopefully that motivates him. And then hopefully he re-signs with the Riders, because, man, a motivated Charleston Hughes, that's great news.
Well, and right now, as you see, everybody's taking one-year contracts, right? There are very few. Quarterbacks are getting renegotiated for a couple years. Fajardo, for example, has a contract through 2022. Everybody else is on a one-year deal. So on a one-year deal, Charleston's value goes up dramatically. If you needed him, if you were signing all these dudes to 3 years, yes, absolutely, Charleston would probably fall even further down this list. But on a one-year deal for what he can do in 2021, man, Charleston is going to be a monster. So Charleston at 6, Micah Johnson of the BC Lions at 7. There is McLeod Bethel Thompson at number 8. And you were asking Marshall Ferguson about MBT. Where are you on McLeod Bethel Thompson and his potential for the Canadian Football League?
Well, I always thought that he was kind of underrated, and that was up until about an hour and 15 minutes ago, because Marshall Ferguson brought up a good point that I didn't really think of before. McLeod Bethel Thompson is the king of garbage time points, like fantasy points, that is. That guy, because he plays for the Argos and the Argos are so bad, always puts up huge numbers in the fourth quarter, because I always look at the stat line, the box score, and I'm like, man, McLeod Bethel Thompson's chucking it like another 400-yard game. But Marshall Ferguson opened my eyes today. It's like, yeah, a lot of that's in the fourth quarter when they're down by 30 just chucking prayers. So, well, I mean, I was a big MBT fan, but now I got some doubts. I don't know. I might be changing my mind a bit.
Well, here it is. I was able to pull this out. Teams trailing by two – actually, this is two scores or less in the fourth quarter. I wish this was two scores or more in the fourth quarter. I don't know that that happens as much as folks think. Like, his trailing by two scores – he had 80 pass attempts out of this past season, and his numbers were tremendous. They weren't outlandish, but they were really good. For the whole season, he was in not garbage time, 22 touchdowns and 12 interceptions. Those aren't really bad. I think that might get overstated with MBT, because we think of Toronto as terrible, and we think of them as, well, they were able to beat Ottawa. That was the one team they could beat, right? Which is not a real, that's not encouraging. Here you are, in all situations, trailing in the fourth quarter, McLeod Bethel Thompson had about a quarter of his pass attempts. He completed them at a 64% rate for 6 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. So for the rest of the season, 20 touchdowns, 11 picks, and his completion percentage was over 70 in non-trailing in the fourth quarter situations. To me, I don't understand why he isn't a starter. I would absolutely give him a starting job. If you told me Matt Nichols or McLeod Bethel Thompson and my coordinator is not Paul Apolice, it's MBT all the way for me.
He throws such a pretty ball, too.
Yeah.
Like, is such a pretty ball. Doesn't really throw a lot of ducks. He's got great form, great mechanics. And, like, I would love to see him as the quarterback in Ottawa, like, being the Red Blacks, because he looks like a lumberjack. He would look the part in Ottawa. Like, he's got the huge beard. He's kind of got that, like, rugged look to him. I think if Arbuckle doesn't work out in Ottawa, get Bethel Thompson over there and just embrace the lumberjack.
Yeah, that'd be great. I would love to see that. That would be absolutely fantastic. So Cam Judge at 3, Charleston Hughes at 6, number 9, Cordero Law, number 10, Ed Gainey of your Saskatchewan Rough Riders, the boundary side halfback at number 10. This has been longer than I thought it might be with Gainey. I thought Gainey would be one of the guys. It's been longer than I thought with many of the defensive guys, and maybe that's just how the Riders are spacing out announcements or how they're attacking this. But I honestly thought Gainey would be a piece that would be back and in the fold already.
Especially because he's such a presence in their locker room. He's a leader. He's been there for a long time. He had the epic, it was 11 pick season, right?
10, yeah, 10 in 18.
10 pick season. Yeah, like, I mean, he's proved himself to be one of the leaders on that Rider defense. And the fact that he's not signed yet is a little weird, but it almost seems like the Riders have a plan with all these re-signings. Hey, like, they're doing it strategically. They always have something witty to say on Twitter when they're doing their re-signings. They have a plan. So I trust what's going on, and maybe they're just doing, like, hey, save the best for last. Gainey and Hughes, they're back, baby.
Yeah,
and then positive thoughts. Cameron Judge too, obviously, but maybe that's their plan. I don't know.
Solomon Elamimian comes in the list at number 27. Man, I when I think of Judge at 3, I think of Elamimian at 27. I really, in my heart, and I can in no way prove this, but I really, in my heart, believe that the effects of Solomon on Cam Judge are reason enough, just in their own, to bring back Solomon Elamimian. Just, I think he is fantastic, and I think the things that he can do within a defense help out the guys around him so much that, man, if the Riders don't get him back, then whoever brings in the, he'll be now 34 during the season, will get a real score in Solomon.
He exceeded my expectations last year. I don't know about you, but coming into the season, everyone was like, oh, he's too slow, he's too old, he can't do this. Guys, it's Solomon Elmimian. Like, he's a CFL defensive, I wouldn't say legend, but he's been one of the best defensive players in the league for the past five, six seasons. This isn't a scrub here. Like, he knows how to play football. Sure, there were moments where you're like, okay, definitely lost a step, definitely a little slower. But that veteran leadership and the mentorship to Cam Judge, and he was making plays out there. I mean, if he can do that again next year, that would be awesome. But by the end of last season, it did kind of look like he was slowing down a lot. But hey, fingers crossed. Positive thoughts. Theme of the show today.
Yeah, he had a bit of a slow beginning, but then he had a cast on his hand, right? So you miss a couple tackles in the opener. Well, you're playing with a cast on your hand. So we gotta excuse some things. We can't expect perfection in everything. So three Riders in the top 10 of the CFL's pending free agents list. Tell us what you think on the text line, 306-936-6262. If you had to pick one, Judge, Hughes, Gainey, Elamimian, who would be your top priority for the Riders in 2021? It is 5:50. Craig Adam at 6:05 talking about our friend Warren Woods on the Cage.
.552 with the sports ticker. Jets are back on the ice looking to follow up their stolen win from Tuesday. They take on the Senators again. Game time is at 6 p.m. and the Habs and Canucks at 8:30. Maple Leafs are awaiting results on Joe Thornton's MRI. The 41-year-old appeared to hurt his arm or wrist in the third period last night. Thornton broke that 1,100 games played mark this season, his 23rd in the NHL. Philadelphia Eagles have hired Nick Sirianni as their new head coach. He's been the offensive coordinator in Indy for the last three seasons. Sports ticker for Bronco Plumbing and Heating, where professional service is guaranteed. They'll treat you right. 781-2090.
Just a couple minutes left in the 5 o'clock hour before Ryan McNally brings us the news. We should dip into the NFL story. And Dwayne Haskins signing a one-year contract with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Haskins, the first-round pick of the Washingtons two seasons ago. It did not go real well in 2020. We believe in Dwayne as our starter. He started four games, played pretty bad. They pulled him out. He then had some issues later in the season to the point where they cut him late in the season. They cut a salary-controlled quarterback whom they took in the first round of the draft 2 years prior, which just does not happen. It had to be just atrocious. So, Clayton, Washington cut him. I got it. Made perfect sense. Pittsburgh bringing him in, get him on a low salary on a one-year deal. Haven't seen the salary figure, but it'll have to be on a low salary on a one-year deal, according to Adam Schefter. I have no problem with this move either. If they could squeeze out a little value there, that'd be fantastic.
Such a low-risk, high-reward move by the Steelers. Like, this guy is a first-round pick. Sure, he looked like hot garbage this season, but he's still a first-round pick. Like, he's got a lot of potential. I had high hopes for him in week one. I don't know if you remember, but the Washingtons were down going into halftime, and according to reports, Dwayne Haskins had this, like, epic halftime speech to raise everyone's spirits, and they went out and won the game. After that, it was all downhill. But, like, I thought he had that great week one moment. And Washington supporting cast, not great. I mean, not bad. Terry McLaurin turned out to be a pretty good player. Yep. But Pittsburgh supporting cast, you got a great running game. You got Connor there. You got awesome receivers. Maybe Dwayne Haskins, I mean, maybe he just needs some toys to play with. So, I mean, again, he's not the best option. But former first-round pick, why not take a flyer on him?
Well, and that was the thing, right? The New England Patriots took a flyer on Cam Newton, a guy with injury troubles, and they said, okay, we'll pay you $1 million and we'll give you some bonuses up to this, that, and this. And I think it was supposed to max out at $8.5 million. In a game where you have to pay quarterbacks so much money, which is the NFL, like Patrick Mahomes is $45 million a year, in a game where you have to pay them so much money, if you hit one out of 20 of these guys that you pay $1 million to, you're so far ahead of the game, it's crazy.
Another thing people need to take into a factor here, playing quarterback in the NFL is very, very difficult to do.
What?
It's going to take a while. Like the real good rookies, yeah, they can come in and they can dominate. Like rare athletic freaks like Justin Herbert. Okay, guys like that can come in. But, like, for a lot of the NFL starters, it takes them a little bit of time. Like, it doesn't happen all the time. It's starting to happen more and more that these rookie quarterbacks come in and dominate right off the bat. But you don't see it still too often, and maybe Dwayne just needed a change of scenery. Maybe Dwayne just needed maybe he just needed better receivers. I'm rooting for him because I like the name Dwayne. You don't see too many Dwaynes anymore. Like, there's no baby Dwaynes out there. No one's calling their kid Dwayne, and that's a shame. Dwayne needs to make a comeback, so I'm rooting for Dwayne.
Well, your point about it takes quarterbacks a while, right? Think of the roller coaster that the three guys drafted 2 years, pardon me, 3 years ago, have now been on. Baker Mayfield was the first overall pick. Dynamite first year, bad second year. A lot of bad in this third year, but picked it up toward the end. Josh Allen, atrocious first year. Slightly less atrocious second year. Borderline MVP of the NFL in his third year. Lamar Jackson, oh boy, I don't know what we did. Second year, literally the MVP of the league. Third year, ooh, there's some holes we're going to have to deal with. It could be rough going for rookie quarterbacks, or for young quarterbacks.
I think the trouble is you compare them to each other, right?
Right.
You're like, oh, well, Josh Allen had success, so why isn't Dwayne Haskins having success? Well, how much time do you have? Because there are a lot of points in this argument. Like, the offensive lines are different, the supporting cast is different, the coaching staff, the team culture. Like, just because one rookie quarterback gets drafted in a dream situation doesn't mean that happens to every quarterback. Like, that's what I think hurts these young quarterbacks the most. They just compare. They always get compared to one another. And it's like, yeah, I don't care if Josh Allen's lighting it up. I'm doing my own thing, right? So young quarterbacks kind of have to put the blinders on and worry about their development. If they're age 30 and they're still doing this, then, yeah, maybe retire. But it sucks. They're just, these young quarterbacks always getting criticized. They're always under a microscope.
And then you just happen to be in the same draft as Patrick Mahomes, and you go, okay, well, curse my life. I'm Mitch Trubisky, exactly. And I'm cursed forever.
Yeah, took my team to the playoffs, and still everyone hates my guts.
Because I'm not.
Gotta feel bad for Mitch Trubisky. Probably the nicest guy on the planet. Like, he looks like such a genuine guy, most hated guy in Chicago.
Quarterbacks drafted that year. Mitchell Trubisky at 2, Patrick Mahomes at 10, Deshaun Watson at 12. Oh, you feel for some guys. You feel for some guys. At least he's not Deshaun Kizer, and he's still in the league. Goodness.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that guy.
Yeah, that was a quick bounce out of the league for second-round pick Deshaun Kizer. Oh, my goodness. Clayton, 2 days this week. It's great to have you on the show, man. Back with you next Wednesday. Looking forward to it already.
Highlight of my week, bud. Can't wait. Zinger, man. Keep the zingers going on the sports ticker.
I appreciate you, man.
He is.
See what I did there, guys? You see, because
like
his name Zinger.
I'll grab a Zinger sandwich tonight too. I'm on the chicken train right now. So
nice. Just keeping them going. Clayton Croker, you can hear him mornings at 96.3 Cruise FM out of Saskatoon, and Wednesdays here on the Sports Cage. 5:59. Ryan McNally with news on the other side. Craig Adam on the life of Warren Woods coming up on the Cage. .605, it's the Sports Cage on a Thursday. Thank you so much for being with us wherever you are. Sports Cage on Demand, listening live wherever you are. We appreciate you joining us. Yesterday, we lost a real great guy and a real impact person within the Saskatchewan sports and sports media landscape as Warren Woods passed away yesterday afternoon. He, of course, on the radio and on Sportsline, which shows like that mean so much to I was a viewer of a show like that back in the day, and how much those anchors meant to me and my sports fandom, I can't even put into words. Hopefully our next guest can. Craig Adam worked with Warren Woods on Sportsline. Nice enough to join us today. Craig, thanks for giving us some time today.
Yeah, thank you, Derek.
When you think of Warren Woods, what do you think of?
Boy, there's so many things that come to mind, isn't there? Woodsy was the people's person, right? You know, we used to joke you know, because anytime we would go out, you know, he would just hold court with anybody that would want to talk to him. And of course, he would talk to everybody. And, you know, I used to bug him and call him the King of Kensington, because it just seemed to, you know, he was one of those guys that just resonated with so many people on so many levels. And even to this day, you know, seeing all of the outpouring of memories that are being shared from people that didn't even know him personally, but felt a connection.
Yeah, and whether, I mean, people have texted us to say, oh man, he would stand in the south end of the Brandt Center and wouldn't even sit in a seat at the Pats game, but he'd just be there just talking to people. Just to just truly like people that much is, that's a real gift and a real blessing.
Well, and that's what people found about him, Derek, is that he was the same person in person as he was, you know, on the airwaves or in the studio. I mean, you know, sometimes there's a different persona when you're on the air and when you're not, but he was just the same old guy. And I think that's why people loved him so much. And, you know, and he gave back to the community. He was the first person that would be there when people were in trouble. I moved here in January of 1996. And that's when I joined, you know, at the time it was STV, it then turned to Global. You know, and I was thrown in right into the fireworks that year, because of course that was the year that the Rough Riders were in huge trouble. We had the telethon that spring to save the Rough Riders. That was in '96 when I moved here, and Warren was already well entrenched, and so I really got a good sense of his connection to local sports at that time, and how important it was to him, and so that. That's how I was introduced right off the bat to not only to the Rough Riders and Rider Nation, but certainly to Warren's connection with local sports.
I've heard the phrase work dad thrown around by more than a handful of people who worked alongside Warren. When you joined up in 96, work dad, was that an appropriate way to describe kind of how he was in the office and how he was to the younger folks?
Well, I'm getting up there in age too, so maybe I don't know if he was my work dad, maybe my work uncle, but he was, you know, certainly a lot of the young reporters, and you know, certainly as time goes on, you know, everybody looked up to him. I mean, he was one of the originals in 1987, and he's been through so much, and you know, he was just the voice of reason. You know, he never got too excited about, you know, certain things when it came to work, and you know, certainly got excited and passionate about the Rough Riders or anything else that would, you know, light a fire under him. But he was a work dad. I mean, he was just one of those guys that he's been around, he's seen everything, and, you know, certainly he's going to be missed.
Talking to Craig Adam on the Western Pizza Hotline, which is why it was interesting. We had Marshall Ferguson from TSN Radio in Hamilton on. He said, oh, yeah, no, Warren went to Mohawk College. And you go, oh, yeah, he was in what, Sudbury and Thunder Bay in his career? That he's not like a day one Saskatchewanian, but I just think of him as Saskatchewan. I guess he grew into that role the longer and longer he lived here in our great province.
Well, he totally did. And, you know, I'm born and raised in Saskatchewan, and raised up in Hudson Bay, and Hudson Bay rules, of course. And when Warren moved here in 87, I mean, that was the time when STV had just started on the airwaves. And there's a lot of rumors that, you know, STV wasn't going to stay around, and it, you know, it's only going to be here for a couple of years. And, you know, and Woodsy even said he thought maybe he was going back to Ontario. He never forgot his roots, never forgot where he came from, but he ended up finding roots in Saskatchewan, loved the people, wanted to stay here. And of course, you know, time is a telltale of that. And you know, he was just one of those guys, and always would joke about, you know, back in the Sudbury days and the Timmins days, and you know, and of course Sportsline in Ontario was huge too, with Jim Taddy and yep. Don Martin, of course, in Toronto, and you know, we were always in constant communication with those guys. And so it was just one of those guys that everybody looked up to here, and he started something that, you know, has lasting memories for a lot of people. You know, just you see the outgoing of support. I got a random phone call from a guy today, and he said, you know, and he started breaking up on the phone, and which of course made me break up. And he said, you know, I remember, you know, watching you guys. And I just wanted to phone and say how sorry I am. And you know, and then he said, though, one of the funniest Warren Wood stories that he remembers watching Regina Pat's highlights was, you know, in the intermissions, they're always having these silly contests. And there's a guy blindfolded and they have this race down to the goal line. Of course, he ran into the goalpost and, or the crossbar. And there's Woodsy saying it was the hit of the night. And, you know, the guy that phoned me, you know, Rob, you know, he's probably in his 40s or 50s. And those are memories that he takes with him. And that's a long time ago.
Well, and to, something like that can't be understated for sports fans of a certain age in our country. Nowadays, of course, everything's online and we're kind of centralized with TSN SportsCenter and Sportsnet connected. But for like for me growing up in Alberta, we were lucky enough to get the show from Edmonton and the one from Calgary. So I think of Darren Detition and Perry Solkowski in Edmonton, and I was a teenager watching those guys. And in Calgary, Mike Toth and Mike Lonsborough and Grant Pollock. And I honestly, as a sports fan who later figured out I wanted to be that for a living, just as a sports fan, I'm like, these were my guys. I don't know them at all. But, man, I would – if I heard anything bad about Mike Lonsborough, I'd fight somebody. Like, we did, as sports fans, we develop passion for folks who were in the role like you and Woodsy were because you were our guys doing our show in our town.
Well, that's just it. You know, there was no social media back then, and, you know, people – you know, had to beg their parents to stay up till 11 o'clock just to watch the high school highlights. And I got messages like that, that, you know, I begged my dad to let me stay up and watch the high school sports and watch the highlights because their buddies are on there and everything else. And that's the only way that you could get your local highlights and your local sports was for us to cover it. And then that's where he really connected with people was on the local sporting scene. Right. And when I talk local, I mean, we are talking Rough Riders, of course, and the Pats. But, you know, there's high school athletics and, of course, university sports. And, of course, curling, you know, big curling fan. But he was the guy, or we were the people, you know, Ron Rimmer and Pete Labardius was here, you know, quickly before myself. And then Warren and I had a good long run for 6 years. But that's where people got their information and we were there to provide it.
As you went along, what did you take from those 6 years together?
Well, you know, there's a real bond, obviously, Derek, as you know, working in sports and team sports, of course, you know, brings that out with everybody. And, you know, we had such a good chemistry and, you know, we worked with a lot of people over our careers and you have coworkers, but, you know, rarely, you know, do you have coworkers that become best friends and not only when you're working with them, but after you've gone your separate ways. And, you know, I left Global TV back in 2002. So it's been a long time, but we've remained really, really close since then and best friends, you know, since then. And I guess that just tells you the type of relationship that we would have had because such a likable guy. I mean, he was just who he was. And you could not help but love the guy, and he's really going to be missed.
Yeah, and to think of that, right, if it's been 19 years since you worked together, as I get older, I realize it takes a lot of energy and a lot of desire to keep friendships active. Like I can phone up buddies from, you know, I last talked to a couple of years ago, and you can fall back into that rhythm. But to keep those active takes a lot of want to on the behalf of a person. So that Warren was doing that, and that you and Warren were still close is a real testament to the both of you.
Well, he would never forget that you were friends because he would he would rehash the same stories over. Like if he told it once, he told it 1,000 times. And I would just let him, you know, tell the old stories again. And, oh, my wife, Deb, you know, she's heard all the old stories a million times. But I loved when he told them because, one, you'd hear that infectious laugh of his that everybody talks about. And I always wanted to see if he could get through a story without laughing. So that's kind of how that relationship, you know, went along was he was always there to make sure, and boy, he had a memory on him. Like he would remember some things that I couldn't remember, and he was always there to bring up those memories.
I suspect the good ones and the bad ones too. Hey, remember that time when you first got here and you blanked and you broke the printer and we were screwed?
I love it. All of that stuff. Well, you know, my first sportscast, I'll never forget it. I came in, I was pretty pumped. I came from Lethbridge. I was there for about a year, and I came here, and, you know, big city, big, you know, covering the Riders. And of course I had a suit and tie on, and everything was pretty casual back on the Sportsline days back then. And after the show, Woodsy's like, yeah, that tie, yeah, no more ties. You're making me look bad. So I hardly wore a tie ever again. So I was told by, like you said, my work dad, not to wear a tie anymore.
Yeah, he was a guy whose name I knew as I kind of crisscrossed the country trying to get a foothold in the business, and I was pleased to. I didn't get to interact nearly enough with Woodsy in my time here. Part of it is work, part of it is COVID, and part of it is being at different stations. But yeah, every time I'm like, well, this guy's really nice. Oh, he works for the competitor? Okay, well, I'll have to hate him a little bit. But you couldn't hate – I couldn't hate it. I just think of the smile, and I think of him. He'd be zinging Daryl Davis or whatever when we'd be out for having a drink with a bunch of us. And I'm like, this is a good dude. And I wish I'd gotten to know him better than I did.
Yeah, well, that's really nice of you to say, because he was like that, and he was like that to, you know, to so many people. And, you know, he loved what he did, right? And you could tell that on the air, where he went to work, loved what he did, and he's continued to do that, you know, for a long, long time. And I think that's one of those memories and legacies that he's going to, you know, he's going to leave behind.
Yeah. Craig, I'm so sorry for your loss. It's just such awful news. I'm glad we had him, but, I don't know what I can truly say other than I appreciate you, taking a walk down memory lane with us and honoring one of the truly good guys that we had.
Well, I appreciate that, and you know, I know his daughter Nicole and Chris were here by his bedside when he passed, and you know, they're super thankful for, you know, the staff and the doctors and nurses and everybody at the General Hospital who have just been like rock stars, you know, this past, you know, 6 or 7 weeks, and the community rallying around Woodsy, you know, they're just so thankful for that, and you know, can't thank the community enough. And you know, and there'll be a celebration of life at some point, and, you know, COVID, you know, kind of puts a damper on a lot of that. And, you know, in due time, they'll make some decisions on that, and everybody will be able to, you know, share their memories, in good time for Warren Woods.
Yeah. I can't wait to raise a glass to a really, really great dude and a very important member of our sports media family. Craig, thanks so much, man. I appreciate you giving us some time today.
Thanks for having me.
He is Craig Adam. He was a former anchor on the Sportsline. Now, doing some good work in the realty business in our fair province. As we remember Warren Woods, who passed away yesterday at the age of 66. It is 6:19. We'll go on a break. More coming. Six 21, the Sports Cage on 620 CKRM. All the guests of the show up here on the Western Pizza Hotline. Don't feel like cooking tonight? No problem. Just order Western Pizza with contactless delivery available. From the Molson Coors text line, Robert says Cam Judge now has to be the top priority for the Riders. He is number 3 on the CFL's list, league-wide, of the top 30 free agents. TC in Medicine Hat says he wants Ed Chucky and Cam back, obviously, but Judge is the dude we need to focus on. Ratio breaker at linebacker, likely could play all 3 positions. I wonder if Judge is super athletic, right? He is a tremendous athlete. Wonder if he could play the Sam linebacker. That would be interesting to see. Oh, Zinger, this will be a good one. Let us go to the Western Pizza Hotline. John is on the line. John, you have a memory of our friend Warren Woods.
Yes, I do. When he was on with Ron Rimmer on STV and Global.
Yeah.
Years ago, I made a bet with Ron Rimmer when the Montreal Canadiens played the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I told him that if the Habs won, Ron had to wear my jersey on air.
Okay.
And I remember Ron did the Rams games on TKRM, and he made the statement. He made a bold statement and said the Rams won just prior to the Leafs going 11-0. I phoned him that night and I said, Pierre Turgeon's going to get 5 points. Montreal's going to win 7-3. They won 7-2. Turgeon got five. So I took the jersey down there, and I went and I stood in, like, they let me into the newsroom because I told them I was there to see him, and they laughed. Yeah. And I held it up like this, and Warren looked back, and he laughed, and he says, Ron, you want to turn around and have a look at this?
Oh, no.
And I'm standing there, and I had my jersey, and Ron just shook his head, and he said, give me that damn thing, and he put it on, and Woodsy just had a good laugh, and I'll never forget that laugh.
Yeah, he absolutely had an infectious laugh, and I mean, you got to watch him, presumably, for years on TV. He was the same dude in person that he was on TV.
He was. I talked to him a couple other times, too, and he was a great, great man. He was very personable, like Craig Adams said. You know, when you could make him laugh, and he, you know, was just a personal guy. He loved everybody, like Craig said. You know, I'd see him at Pats games. I'd talk to him and say hello, and you know, I'd say, you know, good luck to the Leafs. They're going to need it, and he would laugh. And
It's nice to be able to needle the folks that you see on TV and find out that they're the same person in person that I enjoy on television. That's always heartwarming to me.
Yes, they sure are.
Awesome, John. Thank you so much for that. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, John, joining us on the Western Pizza Hotline with memories of a friend of the sports community, Warren Woods. And man, did you ever see the outpouring of emotion on social media yesterday from every sports organization in Regina? People left and right, people from outside the province.
Yeah,
people,
nationwide, eh?
It was,
yeah.
Bob Weeks, TSN's golf guy, responded to the tweet I put out promoting the show. I just said, we'll talk about Woodsy and legend.
Yeah.
He said legend. I'm like, not sure how Bob Weeks knows Warren Woods. Yeah. I honestly don't know if there is a connection or just ran across. Maybe Bob went to a Pats game at one point and ended up just with the King of Kensington. I love the thought of the King of Kensington.
Just shows the impact that he had, though, eh?
Yeah.
People that you didn't think really knew of him. I know of him.
Yeah.
I knew of him, so.
And it just makes you smile to think that there's somebody, that there are people like that that just enjoy other people so much.
Yeah.
Even though, I mean, being on Sportsline, like if I'd seen the guys that were on Sports at 11 and ITV Sports Night, if I'd seen Darren Dettich in person when I was 17 years old, I would have plotzed. I would have just lost it. I'm like,
yeah.
Oh my God, I watch you. I watch you on TV. Mike Toth, I love you on Sports at 11.
And it, like, was such a big deal back then.
Right?
Because, you know, today is just so much different. Like, that was your one hub to see your highlights of the day. And when I think of Warren Woods, I just straight up think Rider highlights, like Kevin Mason on the Riders, you know, those old guys. I just think of those old highlights, late 90s, early 2000s. I think of all those, like, you know, those bad Rider teams, that bad Rider team in 99. But it was always good with Woodsy, though, doing the highlights and stuff. So that's really my, it's cemented with me, yeah, as far as Woodsy goes, as the, I just think of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, really, when I think of Warren Woods. And I also think of just how great of a guy he was. I mentioned on yesterday's show, I met him a few times, but every time you met him, he always just had, like, just this charm to him, you know what I mean? So he truly was just a good human being. Yeah, everyone's going to miss him.
Well, and Craig said, I mean, Craig talked about being the same guy on and off TV. I have met people who could not have been more different on and off TV.
Yep.
Some who were the most lively and bubbly people on TV were the most depressed people you could imagine behind the scenes. Some of the people who came off the nicest were just, just terrible people on the outside.
Unfortunately, because, that's true. I've come across that too. Yeah.
It's, hey, I'm sitting right here, dude.
Yeah.
You say, don't say that to my face.
Yeah.
No, but you never 100% know. You can't tell based on who they are on TV what they're like in person.
Mm-hmm.
But to know that Warren on TV and Warren in person were the same guy, and you loved him on TV, and when you met him, it wasn't diminished at all. That is a great testament. And I'm not joking. I mean, you may well know when you get to a certain age and you get to a certain status in your life where your wife and kids and stuff, you're like, man, I haven't talked to blank in forever. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot of time to keep friend relationships going.
Oh, yeah.
It really does. You have to, oh, okay, I got to carve out 15 minutes. Nowadays,
a lot of things have to fall in line for that to happen, right?
You have to really try.
Yeah.
And to know that Warren tried and Craig tried to keep that relationship 20 years after they were off TV is a real testament to both those guys. Our friend Warren Woods, we will not forget anytime soon. And when there is anything as far as a memorial for Warren Woods, we will certainly be able to pass that along to you. And we'll certainly talk plenty more about a great guy here on the Sports Cage. It is 628. Man, over 500 grand up for grabs.
Half a milli tomorrow.
In the Chase the Ace for the Saskatchewan Rough Rider Foundation. Get your tickets between now and 4 o'clock tomorrow. We'll draw live on the air at 4:30. Oh, we're going to talk football. Luke Mullender will be here. Dave Sanchez and more and more. Plenty of great CFL talk tomorrow on the Cage. Thanks for being with us. If you missed any of the show, Sports Cage on demand for the Canadian Brew House. We're out. Zinger at Night is in.